I didn't like that last episode I did. I wasn't feeling it. So my attempt to overcome that episode with this rant. This whole Spurs versus Knicks, it's nothing but 9/11 programming. And you can kind of feel it too. When New York is involved, the energy, its level is high. The fans are just as crazy because now they felt like they finally get that aura, that swag, that confidence that they've been looking for since the early 90s when hip hop and fashion, style, everything came out of New York. Now they just needed a sports team to validate that. I mean, they had it a couple of times with New York Giants. But I think really it's a basketball type of town, basketball type city. Obviously, celebrities go to these games. It's one of the defining moments of a celebrity's life to go front side of a Knicks game. I mean, they had amazing players that played in that franchise. But they're focusing on the relationship, the father and son relationship of Jalen Brunson and Eric or Rick Brunson. Just so you know, Jalen Brunson was drafted 33rd overall. 33rd overall to the Dallas Mavericks. The city of Dallas lays, when we're talking about north and south parallel lines, which divides the north from the south, Dallas lays on the 33rd parallel. That line goes all the way through, like near Israel. Like, so it's all around the whole entire globe. If you think of the JFK assassination, the reason why it happened in Dallas is because of that 33rd parallel. The time he was drafted to the very first playoff game last night was 7 years, 11 months, and 1 week. It's an inverted 9/11/2001. I said this before, when it comes to them inverting numbers, Sept in September means seven, but it's the ninth month. So when they get to July, they like to do all these rituals in July that kind of piggybacks off 9/11 because World Trade Tower 7 fell along with the Twin Towers. So it was something like a 7/11 ritual that day. Even Donald Trump has been caught saying, oh, on 7/11, I was there when this happened. And people make fun of him and laugh. But the reason why he said this is because he knows it's inverted in Masonic language. So he knew he meant 9/11. If you remember the movie or the last series of this movie, Casino, with Brad Pitt, George Clooney, and Matt Damon, there was a part when Al Pacino's character was in the office and he was talking about trying to get this gold phone and he really wanted this phone. And his right-hand woman told him that he couldn't get this phone until September. He's like, oh, that's just like July to me. So, I mean, they put it in your face. You just have to listen to it. They put it in your face of what they actually meant when they mix or invert these numbers. Now, Mike Brown. No, let me go back to Jalen. So the father, Rick Brunson, wore number 9. Jalen wears number 11. So there's another connection to 9/11. Mike Brown, the head coach, his last finals was against the Spurs. And he got swept. Well, I guess when he was a coach with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The last time the Knicks were in the finals 27 years ago was against the Spurs. During the Emirates NBA Cup, the tournament they played before the season, the Knicks beat the Spurs, where Jalen Brunson was the MVP. And who did the Spurs beat to get to the finals of the Emirates Cup? They beat OKC Thunder. Now, this ties in with the whole Jay-Z's performance and the reason why we're talking about the freestyle of Jay-Z. It's because it's the lead up to his performance at Yankee Stadium. And the album that he's going to do on, again, 7-Eleven, he's going to do the blueprint. The blueprint was released 2001, which was on the day of 9-11. So you see how it's all tying in for this mass program, this mass ritual that's happening. Now, I don't know if they're going to add aliens into this or the Project Bluebeam, but they're building up to it. This has been like 2 years in the making. It's no different from what they were doing with The Simpsons, where Bart Simpson held up the magazine that says 9 cents, and it was the Twin Towers in the background. It's no different from Johnny Bravo, the cartoon, where they had a picture of a tower burning and saying coming soon. It's no different when they did it with the, I think it was the Disney cartoon. I think it was with Goofy, when Goofy had children. It's no different from there. They built it up 5 to 6 years ahead of time. Just like when Prince, he was overseas doing this concert, and he kept saying Osama bin Laden is ready to boom, ready to bomb or ready to attack, something like that. He kept saying it. We know that Osama bin Laden didn't attack the Twin Towers, but he was saying it through the, during like this medley, this song he was doing. It wasn't even part of his song. He was just saying it overseas. And this was like maybe 2 or 3 years before it happened. And then, you know, Jay-Z and Dame's fake beef. I mean, they beef like every other year. Every other year is a problem with him and Dame. And I think it's just all fake. It's just, again, it goes back to the movie Black Messiah and Judas. It goes to that, like, we always have to have infighting amongst each other. It's always distrust amongst each other. So they keep releasing this overly heated, this dry and boring Dame Dash versus Jay-Z, because Jay-Z took the company Rockefeller away from Dame, and Dame was shut out when Jay-Z became a Prince Hall Freemason and started to gravitate to Leo Cohen, which is the top-notch Jew over there in the music industry. So Dame was pissed off at that. Then he was running up credit on the business, like getting all these offshore houses, private jets, stuff that he didn't even, I mean, he's just a man. Really, he was just a manager. That's all he was. He was just manager, and he was the guy that would go into the meetings and be the bad guy and Jay be the good guy. Because Dame was a talker. He had a mouthpiece. So he was easily good in an environment where you had to talk business. He was good at that. But he just took advantage of the business and was overspending on the company's credit. So they parted ways. So since then, it's been this big riff. And now he's talking about, oh, Jay's breath smelled like doo-doo and cinnamon. Like, it's just now you understand why they're doing it. It's just a distraction, but also to keep it going until July 11th, because it's money. You remember the days of mixtapes? Remember the days of mixtapes where you had to go online, or you'd had to bump into a brother who was printing them in the back of, you know, and selling them out of the back of his car, or they would sell them in the barbershop, which is where it was used to be, you know, really selling them. It was in the barbershop. And the only time you heard that rappers were beefing was on these mixtapes. Like, you would hear them beefing on the radio station, and then from the radio station, they would play a clip. It would usually be the artist's instrumental from a song he made popular. They would jump on it, and then the mixtape would be sold for like $5 to $10, depending on who you get it from. And that's how they settled beef. They really didn't have much beef outside of the East-West versus West Coast beef with Pac and Biggie. Outside of that, they didn't want rappers to beef on records because they tried to maximize the profit. Rap was then becoming commercialized. They tried to get away from their street character, their street mentality. Obviously, because of Tupac's involvement with, you know, gangs, and Dolores Tucker, who was a congresswoman at the time, or a senator, a politician at the time. And, you know, some of you Gen Xers know this story of how she tried to get gangster rap banned, and how gangster rap was demeaning and derogatory toward females, calling females bitches and hoes. And it was a big thing back then. But I mean, obviously it didn't work because it made people want to listen to it more. And since Pac had such a strong presence in the hip-hop game, it was just undeniable that people were going to listen to his records. But they were trying to make as much money as they could off of hip hop. Now it's much more like gossip. I mean, scripture talks against gossip. The Most High Yahuwah hates gossip. I mean, look what happened to Miriam when her and Aaron were gossiping about Moshe. Now, specifically Miriam, she was gossiping saying that why did Moshe marry a woman that is not part of her tribe? She really had a problem with that. Rightfully so. Rightfully so. But at the end of the day, they just came out of Egypt. The Most High did not want dissension with the man that he chose. It's almost the story I told you about the bears ripping apart 42 children. The Most High don't like gossip. No, Most High don't like to be mocked, especially if it's somebody that he has given a double portion of Ruach to, a purpose to, that it has to be ordered. You cannot talk or talk against who the Most High Yahuwah has ordained. That's why no one's fallen ill. No, that's why no one's getting destroyed over the name Jesus Christ or the Lord Savior Jesus Christ, because it's not a name that was talked about back then. It wasn't even a name that's been mentioned of him, the Messiah Yahusha. So why would the Most High care how many times Hollywood talks about the name Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and mocks it? And then people online talk about, oh, God will not be mocked. You don't even know who he is to say that he will not be mocked. But that's why the Most High Yahuwah bleached her. I'm talking about hit her with white leprosy. Bleached her half of her body white. And what was the reason for this? It's in scripture. What was the metaphor that he said it was like when she had to be set apart from the camp for 7 days? He said, if a father spits on his daughter, isn't she without the camp 7 days? So Most High basically spit in the face of Miriam for her gossiping and talking behind the back of Moshe. So rap is, that's all it is now. And y'all don't see the trap. Men get so excited. I'm talking about so excited when Drake released his album. They ran to TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram, and Twitter, X, just to talk about this man's album. And then pour through the lyrics. Oh, he's talking about this guy. Oh, he's talking about that guy. Oh, he's talking about this rapper and this NBA player. And try to break down these lyrics, but it's based around gossip. And then these Prince Hall Freemasons, Boule, Satanists, Luciferians, they antagonize it, like doing real female subliminal stuff. Like really soft emotional stuff. LeBron posting him out in the water somewhere hitting the golf ball, but he's listening to a Kendrick Lamar song, or he's posting about Jay-Z's freestyle, which is what he should do because they're tied together. Then Kendrick Lamar saying something or posting something, it's just stupid. And then Nicki Minaj posting something that says it's all of this going around so you can be distracted with gossip. Something that the Most High Yahuwah, as I said before, hates. But it's all connected to this 9/11. It's this energy harvesting. And then Donald Trump is integrating, regardless of what they say on the news about him and Netanyahu having at it, regardless of what they say, Donald Trump, he ain't got no power. The United States government is integrating with Israeli intelligence as if they were already. They just bring it in the forefront so you see it for yourself. And the 2027 NDAA, which is the U.S. and Israel Defense Bill Integration, Section 224, it talks about data sharing and using AI to coordinate attacks against their enemies. Now, anytime you hear AI being used in a defensive sense, only thing I could come to my mind, only thing that comes to my mind is Project Insight. You know, if you watch Captain America, Winter Soldier, when they had this whole explanation of Project Insight, where they had all these people's names who were a threat, and they were going to be able to wipe them out within seconds and minutes. That's what they're doing. I mean, obviously, the Most High, he is the one that kills and makes alive, and none can snatch him out of his hand. But who they are going to be able to attack will be the unrighteous. Will be the ones that don't have the seal or the mark of the Most High Yahuwah. Those are the ones that are going to be gone. Then I read in Ezra Baruch, the last episode, where he talks about how great the threshing floor is because of the wickedness. This is what the Most High wanted. Just like in days of Noah. Like I've given you the word. I've given you the Torah. I give you what you need to do to survive this world so I can prepare you for the world to come, because what you see in this world will not be what you will see in the world to come. It won't be religions in my new world. It won't be wickedness and unrighteousness, lying, thievery. It won't be any of that. So in order to prepare for that world, I have given you instructions and what you must do to fortify yourself and your household to receive that glory. This is why he said, I don't care about the multitude. I don't care about those who perish. He said, they're like a smoke, a flame, blades of grass. You don't care. Why would he care? Just like he don't care that the fallen angels that he created were one of his first creations, the ones that he created, he don't even care that they came down here. I said this before, I wondered if he was ever speaking to them, but I answered my own question. No, he's not even speaking to them. Until the day of judgment, he has locked them away. And you would think, why didn't he destroy the fallen angels that went with him? Why imprison them under rock, under the earth? Because they all have their purpose to when he calls them again. Or when they let them out, out of the bottomless pit. Or out of the river Euphrates. I'm going to give you your last moments. I'm going to give you a last moment to destroy everything. You been so infatuated with these people, I'm going to make you destroy everything, and then I'm going to destroy you. Same thing with Satan. You work for me. I'm so righteous, I can't even touch your unrighteousness or your wickedness. My righteousness will come through judgment. All this other stuff, this middleman stuff that goes on in this beyond this veil, the other angels take care of it. The archangels take care of it. The messengers take care of it. The watchers take care of it. Where do you think they get the whole idea of a mafia boss from? How there are consigliaries, how there is underbosses, how there is henchmen or I forgot what they call them, associates. Why do you think this set up this way? Because they look at the Bible. That's how the nation of Yisrael is set up. No one could come to the Most High Yahuwah. No one could come to him just as is. Like you had to come prepared. You had to, one, you had to be pure. You had to be cleansed. Then you go to a Levite, and the Levite from there goes to Moshe at the time he was alive. Then Moshe goes to the Most High Yahuwah. For the most part, it was the Levites who were like the underbosses of Yisrael. I mean, obviously, Most High don't need no consigliere, because he consorts with himself. And no one consorts with him, but he consorts with himself. And then he'll tell you what he wants and what he needs and what rules and statutes to follow. It's the same thing that Satan has made wicked. They all get it from somewhere. So the reason why they're going to have this little integration, if you remember the movie with Ice Cube, which was done incredibly horribly, but it was funny to watch, that these monsters, these aliens were... these aliens were sucking out the data. That's all they want. They want data sharing. They want to create a falsified Ruach HaKodesh. So if they deem you a threat, they're able to go through your text messages as if they ain't doing this already. They've probably been doing this since 2001. They go through your text messages. They go through your emails. They go through what you say, even in the private section of your social media. Your DMs, they'll go through that. If they deem you a threat, they'll be able to go through that. They don't need for you to know. They're not going to email you and say, hey, what you posted online, we need to go check. They're not going to do any of that. Every time we update these phones, which if you have an Apple phone, now the chip, the next Apple phone that comes out, the chips are made in Israel. If you remember when those beepers or those cell phones were exploding to destroy their enemies, I'm not saying they're going to go that far with it, but I'm saying that if they are the ones making the chip, they're going to create backdoors. They're going to create a backdoor to your phone to be for now. It's going all to a data center, all going to AI. So if they look up, has this person said anything about Jews? It'll all come up. Everything from every platform you ever been on, every post you ever posted. And this is why I said in Instagram that it was funny when I start seeing the whole Kanye Hail Hitler song being used as a meme all over social media, and not one warning, not one like little sign underneath the post, like you know how COVID did, where you couldn't say nothing against COVID. Soon as you said something against COVID, they would hit you with fact checkers. You don't even see fact checkers online anymore, right? You don't see that. You don't see the fact checkers from PolitiFact or Snopes. You don't see any of that. You don't even get a warning to say, hey, the information you posted is faulty, and you need, like, you don't even get that anymore. And even if you are talking about COVID now, it don't come up. But I haven't seen anything when it came to the Talmud or exposing the synagogue of Satan or exposing Jews. Nothing has came up. It's almost like X almost. It's almost like Twitter almost right now. The differences between Meta and X is that it ain't porn on there. Like, X is porn on there. But I've seen people get shot in the head on Instagram. Before, you wouldn't even allow to post people fighting, fist fighting, let alone watching a whole page of people posting when people get shot and get assassinated or fall off a building. Like, they really did take away, they took away something on social media so that you could post whatever you want. So the whole time, they're watching you post. If you laugh, if you comment, anything that's associated with Jews. And right now, they're letting it happen. They're letting it all come. Like for them, it's a cancer. The truth is like a cancer to them. They're watching it become so tumorous that when they get ready to cut it out, they'll cut out everything attached to it. That's what they're doing. They did the same thing with QAnon. And I knew that's why I didn't fall for that whole QAnon thing. I knew that's why I didn't fall for it. I'm like, there's no way in the world. When the government start mentioning about QAnon and then people start doing these little 4chan deciphering of these messages, they saying that it's coming from inside the government. And when they started trying to mock QAnon, mainstream media, I said, nah, this ain't even for me. People were posting, where we go one, we go all. That little tagline, and then it was another QAnon tagline or Q they were hashtagging. I said, I'm gonna watch this. I guarantee you something's not gonna come, something good is not gonna come of this. I said, I was almost agitated. It was like, why aren't they giving the Most High his credit? Because it said, in the last days, I will pour out my Ruach upon all flesh. Your father and your sons are going to prophesy. Your old men and your young men would have dreams and see visions. I was like, this is the time we are living in. Why aren't we giving the credit to the Most High Yahuwah? They were giving the credit, which is mostly Gentiles. They were giving the credit to a Q, QAnon, hashtagging it. This is what Q talked about. And it started with that whole Pizzagate thing. That's where it started. They wanted that to come out. It wasn't that it was making them nervous that it was talked about or Jeffrey Epstein was talked about. They don't care. They're bound to an oath of secrecy, and they know they have more power than any civilian or citizen here to ever expose anything enough for them to be scared. So they watched it happen, and as soon as they get rid of the knock, they were tired of hearing about Pizzagate because I think it went a little bit too far. They mass deleted all these Twitter accounts that had that QAnon hashtag in those posts. They deleted all of them. Then in Instagram, they did the same exact thing. They deleted them. One guy I was following, he contacted me. He said, "Oh, yo, what do you think about QAnon?" And he was part of it. He kept, "Oh, Q said this and Q said that." And it was only to the end of it where he found out that Q was a government psyop. And then he started posting it, the information, what he found for himself, by himself, and was crediting himself. And then, of course, he was giving a little bit of credit to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But after that, his page got deleted. I was like, y'all fall for these psyops so easily. But that's the reason why they're doing it now. They're letting you talk about the Jews. They're letting you post that whole Kanye song, which is why they use Kanye. Just like they use Louis Farrakhan, who is a Prince of Freemason, and Omega Sapphire, which I don't know how you could serve three gods in one lifetime. I mean, the Omegas, they serve Anubis because of the Q dog, or the Omega, which is the same thing as Anubis. And it's the Omega is like the feminine spirit of Egyptology. So they serve that. And then Prince Hall serve Jebulon, which is some made up gargoyle god that they don't made up. But they really don't much talk about him, but it's in their writings. That's one god. And then he worships the Islamic god. So this man is serving three gods in one lifetime. And he's used by the synagogue of Satan to push anti-Semitism. That's why they're allowing Kanye to do it so much. And then he makes him apologize to a rabbi of all things. They make him apologize. So it shows you this is what you'll have to do. If you get out of line and if you're not controlled by us, if you're not in our Black Greek organization, if you're not in our Prince of Freemasonry, this is what you'll have to do. You will have to show that you are sorry and apologetic to us. We are supposed to rule over you. You're not supposed to speak out against us. That's the reason why they have that. If you didn't know how it looked, I mean, you wouldn't really respect these people. You would need to see like plan A, plan B, plan C of what to do to get in the good graces of these people. So it puts that fear in your mind. Don't even say nothing out against them because you would be in fear of losing your job and you would have to go beg or go through some Jewish sensitivity training like he did. He went to some museum in the Beverly Hills. Some Jewish museum. I don't know what he thought he was going to learn. I mean, obviously, they would have took him around the same propaganda they give us about Auschwitz and World War II, and all this other nonsense. So it's just a show of that. But like I said, they're allowing so much to be put online because they want to trap everybody when they're getting ready to consume all the data of anti-Semitism, and then when they drop the hammer, everybody who's ever talked about them are going to lose their pages. This podcast will be gone. My two pages, Sight to the Blind, my TikTok, I don't know if my TikTok will be gone because I really don't talk about them as much. But my two Instagram pages will be gone. The Most High Yahuwah said in Baruch, he said, "The wise shall be but few, and those who know, moreover so, will be quiet." So I'm getting ready for that quiet phase. They would need to destroy social media so you can't decipher the biggest psyop that they're going to release, which is the whole thing about UFOs and aliens and Disclosure Day. If you look at the NBA Finals, they're using this whole Wembley character as an alien. I mean, the dude is pretty tall. I mean, he's shaped like a tall gray of what we knew of aliens back then, like these tall grays, long hands and all that. But they're merging that psyop with him for some reason. I mean, if you looked at what Nike did when they made it to the finals, they had like a whole thing where he arrives and it had like an alien head over top of the little San Antonio building out there. And it had a UFO on top of it. Like, it was just pushing it so hard. Then if you've been watching Hulu, there's a commercial that keeps running. I think it's a Progressive commercial. It's a commercial that keeps running. And at the end of it, it's a UFO taking away a car. Like, they're really pushing this whole Disclosure. I mean, you get Steven Spielberg doing a movie, and he hasn't really been doing bigger movies during this generation. And now they're putting them to work on this specific movie about the Disclosure Day. You just know. You know they're going to have to cut out the Wi-Fi for a time. They want you to truly believe that there is an alien invasion. The only news or information you're going to be able to see is going to be through TV. Even if people text or talk to each other, you may not be able to get a message out. Why do you think these cell phone companies were failing over the last, I would say, 5 or 7 years? 5 to 7 years. Why do you think they were failing? AT&T will go out. Verizon Tower will go out. And in between that, you had bank failures. Like, banks were apps not working. Like, what they could freeze your money and freeze the towers at the same time. So you just, it's mass hysteria because you don't know when anything is going to be turned back on. If you're not used to living off a grid, like us Gen Xers and boomers, we have more understanding of what to do without a phone and without debit cards and without money than any other generation. This generation is integrated in like a hard drive into this financial system, into their social setting as far as where they pull news from, how they get along with each other, how they talk to each other, what's going on in the world. Like, these millennials and Gen Alphas and whatever you want to call them these days, like, you take their phones away from them and you take the ability to buy anything away from them, they won't know what to do. They're not hands-on people. They're so used to just crying. That's all they do, crying and confessing either their sins, their wickedness, or just pouring out, being frustrated with the system online. They don't know who to turn to. That's why atheism is on the rise now. Atheism is pumping. I knew atheism was on the rise when I started seeing more and more black atheists create a community. And it's usually through the deconstructing of Christianity. So instead of just looking at it as the religion being false, they look at it as the entire book is false. And even their arguments that pop up online don't make sense. It really don't. But they don't know the history. They don't know the scriptures. They just know the religion, which they said is supposed to be for another religion. But that religion is proven to be unrighteous and wicked. So how righteous can this religion be, Christianity, if it doesn't know how to deconstruct Judaism? Why is it defending Judaism when Judaism is not acting righteously or biblical-like? So it makes it seem like the whole entire Bible is a myth. It's because they don't know the truth of who the Bible is really about. But let me show you. I'm going to give you two examples. One is a Negro woman and one is a white man. I'm going to give you two examples of what they're doing online right now so you can prepare you for what these people will become eventually. Eventually, they will get to this point of, I'm tired of everything. I want to just go out and rob and steal and hurt somebody because I don't have nothing.
I'm not okay. That's just the truth. And I'm scared. I'm really worried for what this month brings. I know I can't keep up this grind of door dashing 13 hours a day to make things work. I'm tired, man. Go out from 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. every day, and then again from 8 o'clock to noon, and it's... I'm not sleeping, I'm not eating, I'm not taking care of myself, but life can't stop. But I also don't know how much more I can take. I think that's the part that's scaring me the most right now, is I don't know how much more I can physically take. Fucking tired, man. Just tired. I'm so tired.
I don't care how nothing gets paid. I'm going to go get my nails fixed. I'm going to take my stepdaughter over to an adventure park to celebrate her 15th birthday that we didn't get to celebrate yet. I don't care.
So she tired.
I don't care anymore to continue to work hard, to sweat, to cry, to be angry, just to afford to live. I'm not doing it no more. I don't care how the lights get paid. I don't care how nothing gets paid. I'm not doing it no more. You know it's bad when you're borrowing money from Cash App.
I didn't know that was
And a lot of us are doing that. We all fix to end up in civil court over Cash App. Borrow limit. Afterpay.
Man.
And then people tell you half favor is going to get better. No, it's not. It's going to get worse. If you don't know the word, then just say that. A lot of us have been struggling like this all of our lives. And to know that it's going to get worse, it's like, damn. We ain't going to ever be able to enjoy it. Especially when you've been struggling all your life. Just to find out it's fixing to get worse. So I'm going to make it better for me in the moment. I can't afford to do anything else. If we don't do something for ourselves just to keep ourselves sane, we're going to go crazy. And I refuse. After everything that I've been through in life, to allow the devil to make me go crazy because of some shit that's out of our control.
One of the things she said, in the moment, I'm going to do what I need to do in the moment. It goes back to what he told Baruch. When a stupor shall seize the inhabitants of the land and they fall into great torments, that is when the time will then awake, when they abandon hope. This is where people's minds are at now, right now. Now, you might not see this because you live in the suburbs or you live in a community where you don't know the thoughts of the people that you're living around, but they're going to feel what these two individuals are feeling now. And it only takes, in their mind, one moment for them to seek just some 5-minute pleasure of them actually succeeding in this system. This is why I've been trying to get you to fortify the hedge about your household. This is why I talked about the movie Purge. It wasn't the people who were poor or destitute, who already didn't have nothing to begin with. It's people who have a little bit of something that don't want to let go of it. That they're living check to check to check. And if you have abundance, if you have sustenance, you are their food now. You are the source. They don't care if they get caught. They don't care if they go to jail. Because at least in jail, you will have a roof over your head. You will have a bed to sleep in, rent free. You have three hots in a cot. So basically, jail is a relief for them. But they'll take that chance and take it from you if you are not covered by Yahushua HaMashiach. If you have not built your house on a rock, they're going to try you. Your faith will be tried. Your understanding of the word will be tried. Your work, as far as what you do for the Most High and not for the system, will be tried. But just like Job and just like Abraham, the Most High will not allow you to go through trials and tribulations if he think you couldn't overcome them. But I know there's some of you out there who are not fortifying your household. And you're thinking in your head, well, this will never happen to me. I'm good. I'm far away from these type of people. But you don't know who those type of people are. And most times, they're right underneath of you. If you live in an apartment building, they're your neighbor. They're living a floor above you or a floor below you. Or they're working at the reception desk. You don't know what those people go through. And they have access to what you bring into your apartment. They have access to going into your place most times because they got the keys. Like, y'all are not really understanding how worse is going to get that she's talking about. Because it's not the people who don't have money that you got to worry about. It's the people who have had all their lifetime a roof over their head. And the threat of removing that financial or security of anything in their lives, you don't know what people are capable of doing. Especially when people have been posting all this stuff online and most people are posting to keep up this facade that they're okay, that they're so blessed that they'll never be poor, they'll never be without. And so when they are caught being without, then they have to overcompensate by destroying everyone around them to keep their lifestyle going. I'm telling you, that is going to happen. This is why we prepare. This is why we serve the Most High Yahuwah, because we won't be able to see the enemies that he sees. We won't. Unless we pray and ask for our enemies to be exposed to us, we won't see them. We have no idea where they're lurking. But those two individuals, I know they don't have the Most High Yahuwah in their life. I mean, she talks about Satan and the devil, but she ain't talking about, you know, how she's following is the reason why she'll be saved and be okay. It's going to come a time, as is mentioned in Proverbs 1:22 and on, how the Most High ain't going to care if you come to him in the day of your need. What it says, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my ruach unto you. I will make known my words unto you, which he's done already. This backs up what Paul said it too. In the last days, he will pour out his ruach upon all flesh. Because I have called and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. He called, you refused, he even stretched out his hand. Nah, didn't want it. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and with none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. When your fear comes as desolation, and your destruction comes as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish comes upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of Yahuwah. They would none of my counsel. They despise all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of their fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkens unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. I'm getting to the hearkening. I'm getting to the hearkening part because I don't got no gun in my house. And my back in such a bad shape, I can't be out here swinging. Swinging from day to day. Fighting to keep my goods, or fighting to keep my house, or fighting to keep, you know, my family intact. This system is way too powerful. And it's the people they have connected mentally, emotionally, and spiritually to it. It's almost like the movie, the last movie, Matrix. Remember when it was a horrible movie, but they put some truth into it, how they were able to lock in to people and use them as suicide dummies. Or they were throwing the people out of their buildings, trying to stop Neo and Trinity from riding on a motorcycle and escaping the city. So people, whatever they were doing was just waking up, controlled. They call it the swarm phase. It was just using themselves as bombs or weapons to try to knock them off the motorcycle. It's like that. When they're getting ready to get you to fight, you'll fight. Like this race war. They're just bubbling in that. Bubbling it. The movie Sinners came out not too long ago. And soon as Negroes saw that there was an Asian supermarket and the Asians were so cool with helping Negroes, oh, they took the TikTok, they took the Instagram and talk about how there was allyship and solidarity amongst the Negro and the Asian folk when they got their businesses to open up in predominantly Black areas. They were ecstatic. They went deep dive research. And how the Asian was so good to the Negro, and how in the movie They owned both supermarkets. They owned the white-only supermarket. Across the street, they owned the black-only supermarket. So they were banking. They were making money. They were making money. The white folks didn't care much about Asians to hate them, but they hate blacks. And then Asians didn't care too much about white people hating blacks because they knew that blacks needed supplies and resources. So they like, hey, we're here. We're here. We'll open up. We kind of share the same plight because we've been thrown in internment camps when we had to go work on the railroads in San Francisco and California. So we share some of your plight. And then Negroes in this era went for it. I was like, we just so dumb. We just easily used. And soon enough, it only takes one little race psyop. It only takes one incident for you to know about it. So all of a sudden now, oh, don't ever shop at their place. I don't know why y'all, you know, want to be allies with them now. Before you were for it, now all of a sudden, So this little 14-year-old kid was accused of stealing a bottle of water. So the Asian guy confronts them. Now, he's been already arrested or brought in for confronting people who he thinks are stealing. Now, mind you, if you got to do all this and opening up a store, why would you open it up in a predominantly black area? For one, why would you, even if it was a cheap location, why would you open it up and then have a problem with black people stealing from you? I mean, obviously, you could just lock your doors or you could do something else after after hours or if it's dark, just lock the doors and have them come to the side window. If you didn't have a side window, then what's the point if you're going to do all that then? You shouldn't even have that business. You should just wait it and kept your money and went to a predominantly white area or a suburban area and open your business there. But obviously, black real estate is cheap. So he opened this gas station up. So he already been into two altercations or three altercations before that one where people were stealing or he thought they were stealing. One person actually stole and the other person that he tackled to the ground didn't steal nothing. But this time they wanted to chase. So him and his family members went chasing after this kid. Now, it's kind of iffy to me because he's been shown in two other videos that he has the gun on his hip. So he has the gun on his hip. So over a bottle of water, it don't make sense. So they chased him. He was far away from the gas station, this little boy, this 14-year-old kid. So supposedly he ran out of his shoes and he dropped the weapon. So he dropped the weapon and they still shot him in his back. It don't make sense. It just don't. Now, it don't even show in the video that he ever pulled on him and shot, fired him down to where he was. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that this guy has been at the gun range every single day practicing from that kind of distance. I don't know. I don't know this man. But it seems iffy to me that if this kid is taking off sprinting and the family members are all running and the guy, Rick Chow, wasn't even the first guy out the door. It was the woman and then his son was out the door first and he was trailing behind them. So you're trying to tell me this man, oh, damn near shot in the open street with cars passing by at this kid and was able to hit him at such a great distance? Don't make sense. It don't. Now, he sat in jail for 3 years. And while he sat there for 3 years, they destroyed his business. It seems to me this was all a setup anyway. It seems to me like somebody put it there. That's what it seems like to me. Seems like somebody put it there. Put this gas station there, set this stuff up, and just watch Negroes fall into this trap. Year after year, they fell into this trap. And then all of a sudden, they just picked this one kid, Cyrus. And it's like, okay, let's just do it then. We don't know. We truly don't know. It could have been an organic event. Or it could have been all scripted and ritual like they do every other event where they trying to get you to be upset at another race. So now this little race war pops off at the same time this whole other incident that happened a couple years ago where this white kid and this black kid get into an altercation and he stabs him. I think this is the one out in Texas, I believe, at a track meet. Carmelo Anthony and how that was connected through numerology with the other Carmelo Anthony. I think it was like the last game where he was honored. Carmelo Anthony, the basketball player, was honored for whatever team he played with last, they retired his jersey. That was almost the same exact day, literally the same exact day as this Carmelo Anthony at this track meet stabbed some white boy. Now, we only seen a small video of this kid, but we have never seen any of it other than pictures of the other kid that died. Now, we don't even see the event. They're at a track meet. You've been to a track meet, even if you have kids that have been that ran track. All those kids are on their phones. So how we don't have not one incident of a video of Carmelo Anthony stabbing up this kid? We would at least see that. Just like we've seen video of a kid literally getting shot point blank range, and they got video of that. So if any altercation is popping off amongst a lot of kids, you would have a cell phone footage or any footage of some kind when they start the arguing. And I guarantee you, they must have argued for like 5 to 10 minutes before they actually did anything. So he got stabbed up, died, and now they're releasing this whole trial at right now. On top of Rick Chow being released. On top of Asians being exposed for creating these little stress dolls, but they're in the image of a black woman or a black baby. They call them Natasha dolls. So they've been showing videos online coded in Asian language because they don't use the same type of platforms that we do over here. They like YouTube, X, Facebook, Instagram. They don't use it over there. It's called something else. But somebody have unearthed the videos of them using these stress dolls. Like, I mean, talking about burning them, crumpling them up, throwing them, like just doing all types of stuff. Then they got videos of them going to Africa. Going to Africa and calling the little African babies Natasha, picking them up and making them, you know, as if they're like a toy, a plush toy, and making fun of them, pointing fingers at them and just laughing. And that's what they're doing. Now, mind you, I'm not going to get upset because those are Hamites. We don't know the curses that comes from that. The Most High knows what they are doing. He knows who those people are. He knows where judgment lies. These people out here, I mean, putting their mouth on the private parts of animals to get them to pee and poop and all this. Then they drink in animal blood, all types of wickedness. So it's no different from what the Amalekites, no different from what the Canaanites did in biblical times. They got them destroyed countless times. And even if you read the books of Yasher, of the sons of Yaakov destroying all the Canaanite cities, you could just imagine the wickedness that was going through those cities that the Most High was okay with their women, men, and children being eradicated from those villages. You would have just imagined the wickedness they were doing. That the Most High allowed 12 sons, and at the time, it wasn't even 12 sons, it was literally about 5 of them that were of age to fight, were going around terrorizing the entire region of South Africa. Because of the wickedness of the Canaanites. And plus, because the curse of Canaan. So we don't know those descendants. So the reason why it's going on now, because the Most High knows that he has protected a few people here. And for everybody else to do what they wilt. Until it's time for vengeance. But that's what's going on. And it's all being released at the same time. So you got this whack freestyle that Jay-Z did. I mean, it was horrible. It was worse than the 44. I mean, it was way worse than his usual 44-4s freestyle that was top tier. He went out there trying to attack Drake and Nicki Minaj and Dame Dash. And it was awful. He don't got it no more. No one cares. He came out there cosplaying Absol. I mean, no one cared. No one. Even his build-up to this freestyle was horrible. Or build-up to his other songs that people were posting were just laughing at him because he's so out of touch. When you talk about money, private jets, taking your woman here, taking your woman there, these secret organizations or the secret places you can go that nobody else can go, no one cares after a while because they know they aren't in their 60s, which is, I think, is really pathetic that a 60-year-old would need to be on stage still performing and being a billionaire at that, still performing songs about how you were in crime 20 to 30 years ago. And the only story that you could validate yourself was when you stabbed Lance during a record dispute, a record company dispute. And then you got arrested for that. And I think that's when you changed over into Prince or Freemasonry, because they could have just put you in jail. But your fear of jail, fear of captivity, was like, all right, I'll sign anything. I'll do anything. Just don't put me in jail. They could have pressed them that way. And then try to go at Drake. You're going at somebody that's 30 years younger than you. It just looked lame. But I know this is a buildup to the whole 9/11 programming and the infighting that it causes. So now people who are fans of Jay-Z are going at the fans of Drake, and the fans of Nicki Minaj are going at the fans of Jay-Z. So it's, again, Negroes fighting Negroes. Then you got these little Asian race war psyops popping off at the same time. Then they bring up the white kid getting stabbed by the black kid at a track meet. So right now it's mass, you know, confusion, it's mass race psyops going on top of the NBA finals. So it's going to be a ritual that's going to be dragged on for as long as they can drag it on. Then they get to July 11th. Then they are really laying the groundwork of what's going to come. Then you couple that with the Disclosure Day movie. That's, I don't know if it came out yet, but that's coming. And then we're going to go into the winter where, again, another election is going to happen. I think the primaries or whatever they call it at this time. That's going to happen. I mean, obviously, got to pick new governors, new mayors, which is funny to me that the California mayoral race with Karen Bass, which is she's in a Greek sorority. And then the next person in line is a guy who was in a reality TV show. Reality TV show. He's married to Heidi Montag. He was part of a reality TV show, The OC, The Hills. Like, if you remember, like, old school MTV days, that's what he was a part of. And now he's a politician. But I looked him up. All you see is pictures of him holding up crystals, doing the one-eye symbolism. So that's the best that America can do. Greek organizations and reality TV show stars. That's how pathetic it's gone. That's how debased the Most High is allowing this country to become, to be able to destroy it. He's sinking it to its very foundational, institutional level of what it is spiritually, and laying it bare for us to walk over top of it. That's basically what he's doing. He's making it, it's almost like if we were drowning and he's releasing the water, like the days of the flood, like he's allowing the water to go down into abyss for us to truly see and breathe, and then obviously get it so low it's like a puddle. So would you be able to walk on top of this system? And everybody else is going to be beneath us. You better start understanding this concept now, that this system is beneath you. It is. All of it is. And even the people who are attached to it, they are beneath you. Now, I'm not saying being haughty, high-minded, or arrogant, but come to the understanding that you walk higher. Your kingdom is higher than this one. So just like Yahuwah, earth is his footstool. The people who are around you that kowtow and step and fetch to the system are beneath you. It's your footstool. If you are worried about money, if you're worried about not having resources or sustenance or security, you go to the Heavenly Father, which is in the highest of highest places. So he can elevate you through your faith to him, your work to him. Then he can set you on high. Then you could be above. Then you could be the head and not the tail. And then you could walk higher. I said in one of these prophets' books, it says that when the Most High starts to destroy these nations with fire, we will be able to walk upon their ashes. I didn't say that. The Most High said that, or the prophet said that. He said, when he starts to burn this land up, we'll be walking on ashes. I wanted to get back to real quick when the brother mentioned fasting on Shabbat, and I just happened to see Luke 18. I'll go with Yehudith 8. 4-7 first. It says, Yehudah was a widow in her house 3 years and 4 months, and she made her a tent upon the top of her house, and put on sackcloth upon her loins, and wear her widow's apparel. And she fasted all the days of her widowhood, except the days before the Shabbats and the Shabbats and the Eve, then the days before the new moons and the new moons and the feasts and solemn days of the house of Yasharel. So she did not fast on Pesach, Shavuot, or Sukkot. She did not fast the day before new moons and Shabbats or on the days of new moons and Shabbats. She was also of a goodly countenance and very beautiful to behold. And her man, Manasseh, had left her gold, silver, men servants and maid servants and cattle and lands, and she remained upon them. So she was good. She didn't have to want for nothing. Her man set her up. But she did not fast on new moons, Shabbats, or feast days. So going to Luke 18, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, Elohim, I thank you that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the Shabbat. I don't know how that even possible. You fast twice in the Shabbat? I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, Elohim, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone that exalts himself shall be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted. So he's saying, between the publican, who was so ashamed to lift up his eyes to heaven, smote himself on his breast, saying, Yahuwah, be merciful to me, I'm a sinner. The Pharisee, who fasted twice in the Shabbat, thought he was righteous. So this is the Pharisee not understanding the true cause of a Shabbat. The Shabbats are meant for rest. That's what it's meant for. And if you are able to do a good work, you do a good work. But they're not meant to humble ourselves by fasting during a Shabbat. Now, Yehudith is known to be an upstanding woman in her widowhood. The Pharisee is known to be abased, not justified. Now, I'm not saying you're just going to fast on Shabbat because, you know, you want to glorify yourself. I'm just saying that to put it in perspective, that the Shabbats are meant for rest, and he's given us all the other days to fast. He's given us the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, to truly fast like a Shabbat from evening to evening. Even though Shabbats aren't evening to evening because it's not 12 hours in a day, it's 24 hours. So he's given us an extended couple of hours to really feel that fast so we can pour ourselves to him. He's given us that. He's given us two Shabbats almost in a day to be able to humble ourselves to him. He's given us that once a year and all the other days to do what we want. And of course, there are other fasts in the book of Yasharel. If you read Zechariah, they're like the fast of the first, I think it's like the first, fourth, seventh month or whatever like that. There's that scripture. That's just a fast for the tribe of Yehuda. I participate in that. You don't have to, but it's out there to participate in. But that's what I do. I'm not necessarily fasting on Shabbats to prove what. I mean, it won't be any different than when you do it any other day that's not a Shabbat. I was reading Mattiyahu 26. And I wanted to bounce something off you guys to see if you understood the scripture as how I understood it. In Mattiyahu 26, 36 through 45, it says, then came Yahusha with them unto a place called Desamin, and said unto Talmudim, sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Kepha and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Now he took three people out of the 12, three out of the 12, to watch over him while he pray. He took Kepha, which Yahusha must have really had a heart for Kepha. Because as much as Kepha failed around him and his words failed, he still kept him close. And even to the point he's saying that Kepha was like his rock. But he was a rock that kept sinking. Until after he was gone is where he truly found his footing, his flow state. Because when he was around Yahusha, he was talking like he could get it done, but he failed so many times around Yahusha, even when he was tested. And then the sons of Zebedee, and I looked this up, he called them the sons of thunder. Why would he call these two brothers the sons of thunder? Because they're zealous and their overall passion for the work. I can only imagine what that passion would have been like for Yahusha himself to really set apart these two sons to call them the sons of thunder. Like, what was their swag, their confidence? How did they speak? How did they talk? How are they performing their works for the kingdom? Where they're just so excited to be around Yahusha that they were really all in. And these are the ones that he chose to keep close to him. Then said he unto them, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came unto the Talmudim and found them asleep and said unto Kepha, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The Ruach indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my father, if this cup may not pass from me, except I drink it, your will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then came he to his Talmudim and said unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Adam is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Was them falling back asleep a sign that that cup would not be taken from him? Now, he told them to stay up and stay alert, because maybe they were going to stop what was going to happen. The state was going to stop the soldiers coming or Judas coming. Because they would have been alerted. They would have been alerted and be like, hey, they're coming, you flee. Maybe was that the reason why he was praying the same exact words three times? Did he really want confirmation for them to be awake and not sleep? Maybe he was so anxious that the first time he's like, dang, I told y'all to pray. Why aren't y'all praying? Because mind you, he didn't want to go through with it. He knew he had to. He knew that's the reason why he came into this world. But even in that moment, he maybe was hoping to get to a point just like Abraham got to the point where he was going to sacrifice Isaac, that he thought that Yahuwah was going to come down and say, nah, you good. Do not lay a hand upon the lad. Go get that ram that's caught in the thicket. Maybe that's what he was waiting for. He's like, well, maybe I will be spared like Yitzhak was spared. Maybe he's going to take this away from me. Because he wanted to prove how loyal and faithful I am to death to his word and to his will. Maybe he'll get the sons of thunder and Kepha to stand and watch for me and to defend me when they come. I don't need a whole army. I'm good with just these three will stand and watch for me. And if this will of yours be done in a way where I don't have to see death or see this trial and tribulation from it, maybe you'll have them stand in front of me as a defense and I'll be able to flee. So when he came out, not once, but not twice, but three times, when he came out three times and saw they were just gone asleep, he's like, yeah, this is going to happen. I'm going to be betrayed. I've been betrayed. They're coming. I know what I got to go through now. I know what I got to do. Do you understand it the way I understood this? Because I really think that's amazing to me. That even in his hour, where he knows this is what he has to go through. But maybe, just maybe, he will be spared like Yitzhak. And he was looking for that sign. He was looking for that sign that they would be awake and praying, that he'll be able to flee or the soldiers won't come because they were standing watch. That he would be able to flee into the forest or flee into the woods or flee wherever, like he's done before. They've told him, like, hey, the Yehudim are out looking for you. And he'd be like, all right, I'll duck off in this city. Hey, why would you want to go into this city? The Yehudim there. Oh, I'll go at this time. Like, he was always moving around them. Because he knew his hour, his time was not yet. But even in his even when he knew this hour was going to come, he was still hoping that it wouldn't be so. But his will be done. And he got that confirmation, I believe. That third time he saw them out here just passed out sleeping, he got that confirmation. He got the confirmation that he needed, that this is what he was going to have to go through for the world and for the nation of Yasharel. Because at the end of the day, Deuteronomy 32:39, it says, see now that I, even I, am he, and there is no Elohim with me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Neither is there any that can deliver out of my hand. So this is Yahushua himself being able to resurrect souls from the dead, healing leprosy, healing blindness, chasing off demons into pigs. This still is a representation of the Most High's word that he is in control. He is power. I have the ability to crucify. I do. That's why Yahushua, throughout his ministry of those 3 years, kept telling, it's not my time yet. He kept reminding them, even when he was on the judgment seat, he kept reminding them. You was with me, you was around me all this time, and you weren't able to take me. You was with me, you weren't able to take me. But now I'm given into your hands. He was telling you, like, you have power to do absolutely nothing. I am here because it's the Father's will. If I die, it's because the Father's will. If I am resurrected, it's because the Father's will. I do not do this on my own. You call me the king of what? But you said that. But there is one king up there who is the king of all. He says that, don't you think that if the Most High really wanted me to come down from this cross, I wouldn't have legions of angels at my disposal? You don't think the Father couldn't send legions of angels down here to defend me? Why would you think I need you? I don't need you to defend me. When one of the disciples cut off the ear of the people that came with the high priest, he said, put your sword away. He said, don't you think that the Most High wouldn't send angels down here to defend me? He said he could do that, but it's his will that Yahushua went through what he went through. So it's beyond me why Christians be saying Jesus is God. It's really beyond me. They really don't read any of the scriptures, precepts, or line upon line. They just don't. They practice a replacement theology, which is no different from what the Pharisees and Sadducees were into. Trying to run away from judgment. You aren't going to be able to run away from that much longer. So I hope I did my due diligence on this episode, because I really didn't like the last episode. But it's exciting. It's an exciting time, especially if you know what you need to know in this system to kind of fortify your household, fortify yourself in this walk. And it's through works. It's through works to the Most High, serving the Most High, and then watching everybody serve themselves. That's the main separation. That's the real threshing floor. Serving the Most High and everybody serving themselves. Even people who think they're serving God and whatever particular type of religion that they're in. I mean, no. You're serving falsehood. And you're just used as right now, you're used as a puppet to get all of this going. It doesn't happen. This world doesn't happen without people being delusional. It just don't. This is why the Most High said in Jubilees, he said, I did not choose them because they were the seed of Abraham, but I chose them not because I knew them. And he's talking about the descendants of Ishmael, and he's talking about the descendants of Edom. He knew them. He knew exactly what was in their heart. He knows exactly where that seed comes from. That's why bloodline is so important for the Most High. Why do you think, you know, the righteousness poured through Shem and from Shem into Eber, Eber into Peleg, Peleg into Abraham? Even though there was Terach, even though there was wickedness and sin amongst even the bloodlines of David, but the point is, it was there. It's only our free will that can nourish what side we want to go on. It was our decision that he gave us. We were given that free will. We were given that the decision-making process if we were going to be righteous or going to be wicked, but we were born with the bloodline to choose for ourselves. So the reason why you are here is because you've chosen for yourself to walk in a bloodline that has already been laid out for you. The traits, the genetics, it's already been laid out to you. You decide which genetics you want to adhere to. You decide what generational blessing you want to adhere to. We talk about generational curses a lot, but we need to start talking about generational blessings. There are righteous people in our bloodline. Maybe we don't know them, or maybe you haven't heard of them, but I'm guaranteeing you, there is somebody in your bloodline that's been righteous. And that kind of kickstarter, or like a flame in your ruach, is the reason why you're turning to the Most High Yahuwah now. It was already in place. When the Most High said, in your womb, I formed you. I knew you. He has known all of our descendants. He's truly been the architect of our bloodlines. He knows what's in them. He knows the curses as well as the blessings. He knows what we will struggle with. He knows what we will overcome. So the reason why we're in situations is because we had the bloodline to overcome. None of us are in situations where we are constantly destroyed or going to be destroyed. It is something about our bloodline and those traits of it that we're able to stay on a path laid out for us that we truly want and need. So we follow it right into the kingdom. I feel sorry for those people who have bloodlines that are just mangled with wickedness, mangled with unrighteousness. This is probably why he just don't care about the multitude that perish, because he's tried to introduce himself within a bloodline. I'm pretty sure he's given everybody a chance in their respective branches. Hey, this is who I am. You should come to me and follow me to save not yourself, but the generations that comes after you. And somewhere along the line, they were like, nah, I hate the Most High. And that is a curse in itself. Did he not say that he will not pardon the iniquity of the fathers, but visit the sins of the father to the fourth and fifth generation? So just imagine the fourth and fifth generation catching hell. And then they saying that, oh, they hate the Most High Yahuwah. Then they add another 4 to 5 generations on top of that. You see how that number could adds up? So mangling that bloodline through the unrighteousness and the impious behavior, you can see now why the multitude right now don't know the truth. And you shouldn't even hate them or get mad at them. You should just truly pity them. This is why Yahusha said, love thy neighbor, because you truly don't know the bloodline that you are hating. And you don't know why it's like that. I guarantee you it's from whatever descendant attached themselves to that bloodline that just hated the Most High and loved wickedness and unrighteousness and got all their descendants and relatives after them to be boosted up with financial gain through wickedness. You can see why some people just walk through this earth oblivious to themselves, oblivious to the Most High Yahuwah. You could see it. You could call them NPCs today. They just don't know. You just feel bad for them. You just don't know. You just don't know what they're mangled with. And most of it is not even their fault. It's just the bloodline they were born into. But consider yourself lucky and blessed to see the truth. That means somebody within your bloodline, maybe not just one person, maybe a couple people. Because look, I mean, for us, it's Abraham. Abraham saved us. And then Shem saved us because Shem was righteous. He was the oldest. So just imagine, man. Just imagine. So this is why we repent for our ancestors and our forefathers. This is why we take the brunt of the generational curses because of that. And now we're getting to these generational blessings when we are righteous. Because righteousness fortifies us. When the Most High Yahuwah talked about when the city of Jerusalem was destroyed or was getting destroyed, he's saying that what I'm building up here, destroying that won't make no difference to me. Because it was built with man's hands. What I'm building up here, as far as New Jerusalem, can never be destroyed. Could never be trampled. Could never be burnt with fire. He said, I'm allowing these nations to be what they are because they are acting as a judge for a time. And after that time is over, they're over. But only I can make something and for it to not be destroyed. Only I can. Like, it's cute that you guys can build a temple for me, but it's built with man's hands. It's cute. I mean, I thank you. It's cute that you did this. I'll put my name there, but I can also take my name away. I think that was the whole cause, the whole purpose of him saying that. Like, it's cute that you can do this. I'll put my name there so you can remain holy. But at the end of the day, it will be destroyed because it was built with the hands of men. Where I'm going to dwell and when I'm going to dwell amongst you won't be built with man's hands, and it won't be trampled down or trodden underfoot by a man either. That I am truly eternal, and I'm the only righteousness you'll ever get to know, ever, ever. There is no righteousness, understanding, and wisdom above me. He's saying that in order to get to forever and for it to never be corrupted is if we set ourselves apart from the natural man. I mean, it's hard to do, but it can be done. Obviously, there's men that are already mentioned in heaven right now that have done it. It's just time to make a decision for yourself which man you want to be.